Welcome to the Blocks, Paper, Scissors podcast. My name is Clark Frelich.
And I'm Clyde Gaw.
The Blocks, Paper, Scissors podcast is non-scripted and may contain potty words. You have been warned. Hey, Clyde, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Clark. I'm doing fantastic.
Awesome. It's been a while since we've had our podcast, so I thought we could start our podcast by doing a little catch-up. What have you been up to?
Well, enjoying spring break right now, Clark, in the process of recuperating on some needed sleep. Just enjoying some time right now. We had a flurry of exhibits, some activity at the high school. We both did, I know, before we went on spring break. And we have an art exhibit at the Indiana State Museum right now with Youth Art Month. And also at the Hancock County Arts Gallery, the 20 North Gallery in Greenfield, Indiana. And we're also gearing up for the big mega exhibit, the Hancock County Art Educators Art Exhibit. That's coming up at Greenfield High School at the beginning of May. Also, we're doing lots of work getting ready for Tab Institute, doing some writing. And we just did a podcast with Abby Peito Bae and Jen Ferrari, and that was fun. We really enjoyed doing the Tabcast with Abby and Jen.
Did you actually listen to it after we recorded it?
I did
listen to it, so I don't know how good or how bad it is. Or
I did. I think we made sense. I think there was some good information in there. We were talking about children's art and the authentic nature of children's art. We're talking about the secret art of children, the therapeutic benefit of authentic art, and then we were talking about the TAB learning environments also. Yeah, I thought it was a real, and Jen and Abby are the sweetest, kindest hosts, and just wonderful to have a conversation with.
And that's what we do. I mean, that's pretty much our conversations. It's funny. We have these conversations and I have a terrible memory. So I don't remember what we talk about. I have to go back and listen to it just to remember what we talked about. I know it was TAB related, but for anybody who wants to listen to it, I'll put a link in our show notes so you can go listen to it. Maybe we should have those guys on our podcast sometime.
We definitely need to do that and reciprocate and hear what's going on with respect to Abby and Jen's professional practice. I know Abby has just accepted a associate professorship at Northern Colorado University in Denver, and also has been a longtime member of the Colorado TAB group. And of course, Jen has been serving as president of TAB Inc. and has a wonderful program in Massachusetts near Boston. And we would love to have another conversation with those two. And of course, they've been interviewing all these superstars in the field of art education. And so they're racking up all these wonderful recordings on TAB Storytellers.
Well, they should stop after they interviewed us.
I think they're a train that keeps on rolling. They've got a great program going on, and I just can't sing their praises enough.
I mean, anytime we can share what we know with people to share our knowledge,
we're just paying it forward, because we think it's the right thing to do.
Right.
We're happy to do so. We know that children benefit, as Kathy Douglas and Diane Jaquith have done with their professional practice. They shared freely, and we still share freely on wherever and whenever we can. particularly on the forums that these social media forums that we moderate and participate in. So what we think that when you have happy children in schools, in art programs, it benefits not just their academic and intellectual development, but it benefits society because you have healthy children developing into healthy adults. And that's basically what it comes down to. Children who are happy with their performance in school, with their existence in school. And that means that they become confident, able-bodied participants in society. And that's what we want, contributing, you know, happy contributing members of society. And as educators who care about these things, we are happy to share, like you said, we're happy to share what we know. We think it's the right thing.
Speaking of sharing, did you happen to catch the latest school arts magazine?
Think well, yes, I did.
Somebody was mentioned in there a couple times.
We are thrilled that Nancy Walkup, the editor-in-chief of School Arts, has been partnering with us. And we have been recruiting some wonderful writers from our group of Tab Folk. We had Melissa Pertee wrote in the most recent edition, and Susan Stein, and we're just thrilled that Nancy gives us opportunity to participate in school arts, because we get to share perspectives about school arts that are not readily available, I think, or it just helps spread the good word about TAB and about choice-based art education. So Abby Pato-Bailly also had a article that was part of her research on the history of TAB, and showcases the beginnings of TAB as it was, she had written about in her thesis. Annie Zirin was one of the other TAB writers that we recruited, and she wrote about the unwanted artwork Olympics. Susan Stein wrote about her TAB program, which is a mobile after-school TAB program. And of course, yours truly had some articles in there about paper mache and cardboard. And I really enjoyed Nancy's, her editor statement, because she talks about one of our other favorite Victors, really fascinated with Victor Lowenfeld, but she wrote about Victor D'Amico, who was running a choice-based art education program at Museum of Modern Art in the early days of that museum. And so there's lots of information about the early forms of choice-based art education as it has developed over the years that are available if you're willing to dig them up and do some research and investigation about TAB and choice. And
correct me if this is the second issue that they've done on TAB, correct?
Yes. And the first one in 2023, we had a huge cadre. You had written for that one, the one in 2023. And I'm trying to remember who else was in our list of TAB teachers in that group. I know Melissa had written, Jen Ranke Zona had written, Jen Ferrari wrote in another school arts edition issue. But we're just really happy that we can connect with school arts and be a part of their tremendous worldwide publication.
Yeah, and I think, you know, just the advocacy and the it really adds a sense of
promotion.
Well, it's promotion, but it's also, I want to say legitimize, but that's not the word I'm looking for. When you're publishing complete issues on a certain topic, they don't do that much. Just to have it on choice, and to realize how far choice has come.
Yes.
In the time that when I started teaching it 20 years ago, people thought I was a lunatic or a fringe teacher and treated TAB in that way. It's just nice to see it all come around to be mainstream. And I think what we recognized early on was how important it was to give kids choice, to give them the freedom to develop their own ideas, you know, the whole basis of what we do.
Right.
And now we have several vehicles that we're using now to get the word out.
It's interesting to hear back on the Facebook page from folks, you know, about how they're dealing with the culture of school and school, the systemic conditions of school and the expectations that art education be just like all the rest of the curricula. And with TAB and choice-based art education, that's a somewhat of a distinction that providing for self-expression through autonomous problem posing, as opposed to in a typical classroom. And you and I have, we know what goes on with respect to standardized testing and its effect on the curricula and on teachers who have to, you know, they have in the general classroom, the curricula can be very much predetermined. And so that's not the way TAB classrooms function. There's a set of essential content that's covered in a TAB classroom, but the children can veer away from that if they so desire. And that's what makes surprise and discovery a vital part of a TAB situation. You know, surprise and discovery is vital to keeping learning fresh, keeping experience fresh, as opposed to outcomes that have already been predetermined. And everybody knows what's going to, you know, they know that there's going to be a test, there's going to be a quiz at the end of the chapter or at the end of the unit, and this is what the outcome is going to be. And, you know, this is something that regular classroom teachers, they can't help. That's the expectation, that they're going to cover all of this material. They're going to cover it in a very efficient manner. And there's no room for play. There's no room for just thinking, time with our own thoughts, like there can be in a TAB classroom. And so everything is directed. Very much so. And I want to stay in my lane here, but I know that, you know, I've had children go through the system. I've been a school evaluator before, been around for 40 years. I know what goes on in schools. I was a Northwest school evaluator back in the early days of my teaching career. We know how pressurized the curriculum can be for general educators. They are required to deliver the mail, so to speak. So their curriculum is, you know, pretty much set. As opposed to a TAB teacher, we can work from children's interests. We have that freedom to develop emergent curriculum.
Do you remember what our message was at the beginning of the year when we all worked together as teachers? What the message was that our administrators were telling us how we were supposed to teach. Remember, we had that speaker come, and maybe
Buddy Barry?
Yeah. What did Barry
Buddy say? Barry? We love Buddy Barry.
Yeah.
He bring back joy. Buddy Barry says, you know,
surprise and delight.
Surprise and delight. Bring back surprise and delight into the classroom. And I think, yeah, that is a element that we want for our classrooms. I think it's difficult for general education classroom teachers to do that when there's
specter.
The specter of standardized testing. in the spring. You have to cover everything before the tests so that now some people are, normalized it and it's part of their,
that's
they're
all
comfortable. They're comfortable.
That's all March is it's all testing. I mean, we went through iRead right before spring break. Kids were all freaking out.
I just proctored a test. So here's the thing about standardized tests that really, really ticks me off, Clark. Now you brought it up. Now you're going to hear this. Okay. The test questions are designed to trick beginning readers with distractor answers. Okay. First of all, you have selected, the test is generally made up of selected response questions, multiple choice questions. And you have a beginning reader parsing through the first, the question. Then they have to select the best answer. Well, the answers are written to trick the little child. And if you're a child who is learning English for the first time, or if you are a child who has dyslexia, if you are a child who has ADD, or if you are a child who has any kind of mental condition that doesn't allow you to clearly focus, these tests are consequential, and they're designed to trick beginning readers or any reader for that matter who might have a any kind of issue. Perhaps the child is living in poverty and hasn't had much to eat over the last couple weeks. And, thank goodness they might be on free and reduced school lunch. We're getting, a meal at school. Maybe the child was whipped by a parent the night before. Any kind of trauma that happens at home, and the child shows up for school, and they have to take a high-stakes standardized test. I think it's just absurd that so much is put on the tests. And that's why I am so passionate about reforming the tests out of education. I think that portfolio assessment is much more, provides a much clearer and accurate assessment and picture of the child's learning capabilities. And you and I both know that portfolio assessment is a much, much more comprehensive view of what the child has learned and can do.
Right.
And using the standardized tests.
And I don't even use a portfolio to assess in my little kids. I assess, but it's not a see what I can do to get a grade type assessment. It's, are they working and thinking and doing the things that they're supposed to be doing in class? Because I've been thinking about, the product, especially in the younger grades, the product isn't, or the artifact isn't what I'm looking at, what I'm assessing. Wow. I'm assessing how they work. Are they persistent? Are they learning to handle obstacles? Are they using materials creatively? Are they working together? Are they, different people will do different things.
And that can be a part of the portfolio, though, a documentation about the child's work process, about their work habits or their creativity habits. That can be a part of the portfolio documentation of it. And we know through electronic portfolio, you can add all kinds of different modes of documentation into that to provide that. It's a switch. I know.
And it's hard to get like little kids to be that self-aware to say, Mr. Frelick, I worked really hard on, and they'll say that. I worked really hard on this.
Yeah.
But is it because I've just mentioned that they've, you're really showing persistence in your artwork. And so now I've planted that seed. And so it's like, yeah, I really worked hard. I have a boy that really struggled to deal with the time limits of not being in art room, in the art studio. A very young kindergarten last year. He's a young first grader this year, but does not handle time constraints very well because he gets into flow super
Yeah.
easy, but then 30 minutes goes by so quick, he can't handle that transition of getting out of that. And so working with him throughout the year has been my goal to get him not to be so get upset at the end of class. And we're getting to that point. He still gets upset, but it's easier now. It's not the full-on meltdown, crying, screaming, kicking, yelling, throwing things that was the beginning of the year. Now it's, I'm upset, but I understand that I can work on it later,
He's fortunate that his art teacher has such patience with him.
Well, you have to have patience with some kids, right? Because says not every child is going to be able to function, go in and out within 30 minutes. You know what I mean? It's you got a 30-minute class, they come in, some are ready to start right away, some are not ready to start right away.
Right.
And being able to say, okay, show me, get to a point where you're ready to begin so we can start.
Yeah.
And of course,
That's the problem. We were talking in an earlier podcast about that's part of the problem with the school schedule is that things are fragmented, and we were kind of joking about genius hour. And now it's time to be a genius, everybody. It's genius hour. And, now it's time to learn about this particular subject. And so the if I could quote John Crow, the constant evolving present in the life of the child is something that has to be considered in each and every learning situation. So I think as tab teachers, we can deal with the evolving present in the life of the child a lot better than other teachers within the school.
And
I
it's the
apologize.
same thing with anything, with art or music. When kids come to me, some of them are not ready to make. Some of them are just, they're not in that the mindset to make. And so as a tab teacher, trying to give them an avenue or find a path for them to start creating and functioning in the studio where they're not distracting other people. Because I think that's one of the biggest issues I think new tab teachers have is when kids have the freedom to move around and do the things they want. And if they're not ready to create, a lot of teachers will say, well, how do we motivate the unmotivated? Well, they're not necessarily unmotivated. They're not in the mindset to create at that time.
Right.
And helping them find ways so they're not distracting the other kids who are creating. And I think that's some of the problem that I see, especially this year, that kids who are not in the mindset, they want to bother and distract, and I have to find them a way of interacting without being distracting. They're being destructive, is what they're doing.
Yeah.
They're messing up other people's artwork.
Yeah.
They're throwing paint on them. And that's what I noticed this year, is that it's not the behavior in itself doesn't bother me. It's the result.
Yeah.
It's where they're affecting other people. It's artwork. So.
That's a good topic for discussion because that topic seems to creep up on the tab forum all the time on Facebook, you know, with respect to how do you motivate kids to make art who have no intention of making art during art time. And we talk about art traps, we talk about art games, we talk about pairing the child up with another person or pairing them up with the teacher, pulling them up to work on a special project or giving them direct instruction. And but like you said, when they become destructive and they're interrupting and interfering with other children who are in the class, you know, that can be traumatic to deal with and problematic. And so
I have this one student that's been my challenge this year. He can work for about 10 minutes. Or if he has someone to work with and he's in the right mood, he can probably go the whole class. But when he's done, he's done. And he will tear up, he'll grab other people's artwork. He'll cut it. He'll run up and grab another child's artwork and want them to chase him after it. He'll crawl over tables. And then when you have interactions with him, he'll shut down. He'll say, "I don't care." You know, he'll just stare off into the space. "I don't care." And it's like, "Well, I care. Let's see what we can do. I don't care. You can't tell me what to do," you know, and just get very.
It sounds like he's oppositional defiant disorder.
Well, I don't know if he is or not. It's, you know, you have to go through, you know, do you want a snack? Do you want to go for a walk? It's like, you have to go through all these things. But he's to a point where he's like, "No, no, no." And it's like, okay, what? So it's like, you call someone to help and then he gets upset because I've got 26 other kids in the classroom.
Right. That's the challenges of public education, that we get all kinds of children.
Yeah, we have to work with them, that's for sure.
And they're, you know, we get everybody in public ed. Those kids are challenges, and they can take your energy, they can zap your energy and your emotional well-being away from you as a teacher.
They are definitely, you know, the ones that I struggle with at times, because it's just, I don't know. And I don't know if it's this group of kids or if it's overall, if it's an effect of, you know, COVID or this group of kids, the preschool group. It's an interesting group of kids to work with, to say the least. I'm not going to blame everything on COVID, but
at some point, the child develops social skills and insight into how his behavior and his actions affect others. It seems to me that, you know, this child may have needs deeper than what you can, an art teacher can provide right now. But having said that, there's the art room is probably the best place for that child if they can gain some understanding that being a reckless individual is not tolerable. And so it's, you know, there is at one point, and if the child were in my situation, I'd keep them very close to me. I'd be really close to kids like that. And but I know sometimes that's not always doable. But I liked it. I've had children in my room who were, you know, similarly, although older, but they were without any kind of consciousness. They lacked consciousness with respect to how their actions affected others. They lacked empathy. And so how do you develop empathy? How do you get a child to develop empathy? And I would say the art room is probably one of the best places for that to happen. personally, in my own experience, I would usually keep those kinds of kids very close to me and working with me on a specific project. As difficult as that can be, that was one of my strategies. I don't how are you handling this particular child?
It's hard because it changes. I've tried working with him one-on-one.
Sounds like there's not ready for choice.
That
They're not ready
works
for choice.
sometimes.
Definitely not ready for choice.
But when you give him something to do, he doesn't want to do it. He
Right.
doesn't want to do that. What do you want to do? Nothing. Okay.
Okay. Well, Rollo May, the eminent American psychologist, said that boredom is critical to developing creativity because from boredom springs.
Well, yeah, it kind of resets your brain. It's like when kids are bored, they always find something to do, right?
Yes.
You get to a point where it's like, oh, okay, their brain kind of resets. It's like, what are we going to do? Oh, I got an idea, right?
Yeah.
And it resets and they jump right into this idea. With this kid, I don't have to think it's boredom. It's just that I don't know if he knows what he wants to do.
Right.
He wants to do something,
Yeah.
but I don't think he knows what he wants to do, or he hasn't developed the skills yet to implement what he wants to do. Because
So
he sees everybody else doing it,
right.
and he wants,
Everybody else is modeling artistic behavior.
right, he wants to participate, but then it's like, well, how do I interact with these materials? It's almost like he's afraid to interact with them because I'm at a loss. This is my challenge this year, is trying to figure out how to work with this particular child.
Here's what I think. I think your classroom and all TAB classrooms that are functioning act as, in semiotic terms, as umwelts. And this is a term that was adapted by some semioticians, von Uxkull and Sebeok. And these are semioticians who are well known in the field of semiotics. But an umwelt, and we were talking about umwelts long time ago, about classrooms that are where children feel a connection, biological connection, emotional connection, intellectual connection, creative connection. They feel connected to that space, and they can operate and move freely about in it and go about the business of investigation, art making, learning, communicating, experimenting. The TAB classroom, the laboratory of learning that it is, a choice-based art room, can be an umwelt. I think this child, it sounds like, and we've had many children like this. They have inborn endowments and environmental conditions and situations that prevent them from operating naturally, or I should maybe may, maybe that is their the way they naturally operate. But they need to understand that in this culture of creativity, they need to learn that the way that they want to disrupt is not conducive to the way that we operate in school and in the art room and in society. And so the TAB classroom can be a place where one learns the principles of how to operate in a democratic society. And so that might be the most important thing that child learns. Maybe art is not art objects are not going to be what this child learns about. Maybe it's just going to be about how to operate, how to be a human being in society. That might be the best outcome for this child. Maybe art teaching is one of our mantles that we wear, being art teachers, teaching about art, but teaching about how to live in the world is probably going to be the most important. How to interact in the world will be the most important outcome of our teaching and of our programs for many children. And so this outcome is critical for lots of kids. The ramifications of the TAB classroom go way beyond just art making.
Yeah, it's just one of those things. It's the TAB classroom isn't always as easy as we make it sound. So, because we are dealing with human beings.
Yeah.
And again, also, he might also be playing on the fact that, you know, maybe he wants to get in trouble because
he gets attention.
The type of attention. I know he doesn't like it when I don't let him leave. So he wants to leave is what he wants to do.
Then it sounds to me like, you know, he's bringing his distaste for school. He's expressing it.
In my room.
In your room. Because you're a part of the school. And so he's expressing what he can't express in his regular classroom. Maybe he's also expressing it in this regular classroom also. But he can do it more forcefully in your room because you're tasking him with ideas for his own tasks or opportunities for his own tasks. You're giving him opportunities to express himself. And this is what he's expressing. I want the hell out of here.
I'm fine with it. You're good. Do what you need to do. But anyways, let's move on.
Sometimes you got to wear like, you know, not just one or two kids, but maybe you got eight kids strapped to your hip. You know, they're like, okay, you guys stick with, we're all going to do a group project together.
Yeah. So, you know, just thinking about this conversation we just had kind of reminded me of some of the stuff that we talk about when we're at the Institute.
Yeah. You know,
we get into these deep conversations about the TAB Institute, it's happening in July this year, the 21st to the 27th, which both you and I will be there and a lot of other great staff. Kathy will be there. Jean Barnett will be there.
Stacy
will be there.
And our wonderful Julie.
Yep.
Wonderful Julie Toole, who we love so much. And not that we don't love everybody else, but we know Julie quite well.
But these are the type of conversations that everyone has. And I know when I was teaching in the elementary section, we'd have conversations similar to these about individual students and problems. And then we have 18, 20 people who are giving advice, sharing their ideas. And that's in a very comfortable situation. I try not to make it too scholarly, but it's laid back. Sometimes it'll happen over lunch or after in the studio, for that matter, when you can sit down and you can really talk to people and get a good idea, some strategies to use in your classroom. So I wanted to throw that out there as far as the Institute, that's, you know, there's still spots open.
I was talking to Stacy Parrish earlier, and Stacy's going to be heading up a new program within the TAB Institute this year, and it's called the Studio Cohort. And she's already got folk lined up to be a part of that cohort, but it's, you know, that particular cohort, there are some requirements that they have attended the Institute before, or they're veteran TAB teachers, but that particular studio cohort, they are going to be locked into they're going to be able to develop emergent curriculum. It's going to be interesting to see what their projects turn out to be.
I'm curious what's going to happen because this is, that's like you said, it's new. We've never done this before at the Institute. It probably was born out of need, right?
Yeah. Melissa and Jen were thinking about, you know, the one of the fun things about the Institute is all the activities going on related to art making, and they wanted to provide more opportunity for that. So they created that extra cohort. You know, we're looking forward to breaking new ground and seeing what happens. Really looking forward to it. You and I have both exhibited at the end of the week every year that we've done the Tab Institute and in our final art exhibit, which is an extraordinary thing because we fill up that huge gallery space.
Such a powerful show. I mean, knowing the people and what we've talked about.
With the new studio cohort, that gallery show is going to be even more extraordinary and compelling, profound. I can't wait.
So if you're listening to this and you feel the need to get an in-depth, week-long professional development, sign up and go to the Institute.
Absolutely.
Charles brings me to my next thing, which is a little less intimidating, probably, would be Tabstock. Again, June 20th to 23rd.
Oh, gosh. Okay, yeah.
Late June. In Michigan.
Southwest Michigan.
Yeah, it's...
That's
very
always...
Very laid back, very fun, very informative. Again...
That's always a chill week.
...that we have.
Camping, primitive camping, and however you can get over there. I'll be primitive camping. Some people may not be, but that's what I usually do. And I love the way Lisa Van Pluset and Candy and Julie... who are all the administrators at Tabstock. Lisa's idea to have we've been doing we did a show last year. We did a pop-up art show, and that was a thrill also. Everybody bringing stuff and doing an exhibit on Saturday evening. That was huge.
Yeah. It's just really cool to see what people do. Again, spending time with people, camping, talking around the campfire, that's what makes these professional development opportunities, I think, so rich, is the amount of time that the presenters and the attendees spend together,
mm-hmm.
and not necessarily a formal atmosphere. Relaxed, fun, very tab-like,
yep,
very emergent. Yeah, if you feel the need to participate, and there's a lot of other ones that are happening around the United States.
St. Louis Tab is going to have I think they have a spring PD event coming up. The St. Louis Tab community is huge.
Yeah.
Their event's always wonderful.
Texas has one.
Texas Tab Lab's coming up.
Yep. That's Colorado up just had their Tab conference, right?
Yeah. Yep. Tab Colorado just finished up back in February, I believe.
Yeah, so, it's out there.
Northeast Tab Camp in Massachusetts, Tab Camp, and then there's also a tab gathering in Maryland coming up. Maybe another Southeast tab gathering. And we have some folk out west who I think might put something together. It'd be great to hear from those folks. California's turning into a tab mecca.
Mm-hmm.
Our friend Susan.
There's always new things coming up. I know the tab community they like to hold small little gatherings, get-togethers. And that's, I think that's where it starts. It's all grassroots.
Our friend Susan Weinman, she just is so inspirational to me. And she's working at Los Angeles United School District and running a TAB program at her middle school. Wonderful program out there. But there are others in all throughout the USA.
Yeah.
And all throughout the world. We know Australia is a hotbed for TAB. We know we have folks who are within Britain.
I think the whole international school community,
mm-hmm.
teachers who teach in international schools, we have there's a lot of TAB teachers who teach China.
Yes, Korea.
Korea, Vietnam, all over the place. So, yeah, I look forward to seeing how it grows and continues to grow.
Absolutely.
But I think we need to wrap this up here. We've been talking for almost an hour. We need to get these people get on their way.
We hope that everyone is going to enjoy some time off during spring break, or is able to has already enjoyed their spring break and gotten some rest and relaxation, rejuvenation. Heaven sakes, teachers need it. Art teachers need it. If you're an educator, you need respite care because you care for others, and take care of yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you all for listening. Yeah, if you ever have any questions or want us to talk about anything, you can always contact us through the TAB email.
Clyde at teachingforartisticbehavior.org or Clark at teachingforartisticbehavior.org. You can find us there. And I know there are some other topics that we need to cover that we haven't covered yet. I know one popular topic is how do you make a learning center? And that's something that we should, you know, how do you make a studio center? What are the tricks of the trade and so forth? And we haven't really delved into that in great detail. We always assume that folks already know how to do that, but it's something we need to talk about because that's such an important part of TAB. But
yeah,
perhaps that's something we'll talk about next time.
Okay. Sounds good. Well, Clyde, have a good day.
Thanks for having me on, Clark.
No, thank you for being here. I appreciate it. Everyone appreciates listening to you, Clyde. We'll talk to you later.
All right. Thank you, Clark. I'll see you later.
All right. Bye-bye.